Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Hello, my name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it is my pleasure to welcome our many listeners throughout the world, and also in this country, of course, but also to welcome the four exciting, dynamic, talented players of the game who've excelled in this show a number of times in the past. And in no particular order, would you please welcome Paul Merton, Stephen Fry, Lisa Tarbuck, and Clement Freud. As usual, I am going to ask them to speak on a subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviating from the subject. Beside me sits Janet Staplehurst, who's going to help me keep the score. She'll blow her whistle when the 60 seconds are up. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Radio Theatre in Broadcasting House, which is situated in the heart of this great metropolis of London. So we'll start straight away with Clement Freud, and the subject is, very apt for Just a Minute, blowing the whistle. 60 seconds, Clement, starting now.
Quite apart from Janet Staplehurst, who does blow the whistle brilliantly, referees at football matches tend to do this when there's a foul, hands, offside, a goal, or a throw-in. But politically and economically, blowing the whistle has come to mean snitching, informing upon others. A foul, beastly thing.
Stephen Challenge.
Two fouls.
Different.
One has a title, the other not.
Yes, but it's
so good.
Radio, yeah. Right. So, Stephen, you have a correct challenge. You get a point for a correct challenge, and you take over the subject, which is blowing the whistle. There are 36 seconds available starting now.
Dobbing, I think they call it in Australia. Sneaking, snitching, as Clement so rightly said. It is not altogether a pleasant thing. Yet, on the other hand, when there are deep injustices perpetrated by large corporations, it seems to me perfectly legitimate that people who spot these... Oh, dear.
Yes, oh, dear.
This happens to me.
Yes, it was hesitation.
It was hesitation. You were going with such
I go too fast. I trip over my feet and tumble downhill. And appallingly, I'm
you
so
gather
sorry.
Pace, actually. Your momentum trips you up.
It does, rather.
Paul, correct challenge. So you have the subject. You have blowing the whistle. You have 21 seconds starting now.
If you walk around Covent Garden, you'll often find street entertainers...
Lisa Challenge.
I had to get in there, didn't I? Hesitation.
Right, 15 seconds. Blowing the whistle with you, Lisa, starting now.
Blowing a whistle can in actual fact be as good as going to see a brass band. If you get someone with the right round face and a lot of wind behind them, it can be a marvellous thing to watch, admire and listen to. Several birds I know like to gather up with their own whistles...
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Lisa Tarbuck. And at the end of that first round, she is in a very strong lead. You know you have the audience with you, Lisa. And it's your turn to begin. The subject is chips. Tell us something about chips in this game, starting now.
Chips can be several things. They can be thin slices of potato, deep fried. They can be components inside...
Stephen Challenge.
Well, two they can be's. I mean, an individual word, perhaps, but when they're all together like that,
yes,
it's pretty repetitious, isn't it?
I feel dreadful.
Right. Oh, no, I don't want you to feel dreadful. I want you to feel
just
super.
No, sorry. I will feel super.
So, Stephen, correct challenge. A point for that. And you have 54 seconds on chips, starting now.
They would say the genius behind gambling was not the man who invented roulette, craps, poker. It was the fellow who came up with the idea of chips. That's what makes sport a pastime, or whatever you want to call it, of gaming so thrilling. The fact that the index of the money that you're actually peeing up against the wall is not real currency, but some symbol which you can play with. Gosh, that's exciting. I don't like potato chips, Nicholas. I'd be the first to say I find them pretty nasty, to be honest. French fries, pommes frites, allumette, call them what you will. I just don't find that they please my gullet one little bit. However, I've said...
Yes, you can't use your normal mode of speech here, making huge emphasis. Paul, you got it. I can guess what your challenge might
be. Overemphasis.
Yes, our repetition. 16 seconds. Chips with you, Paul, starting now.
There's something about homemade chips that's absolutely delicious. You take the potato, you peel it into chip-like slices, you put it into some hot fat, and then you fry away, and then after some time you get them out, put them on a paper towel to get rid of the excess, and then...
Right, so Paul Merton was speaking then with the whistle when gained that extra point for doing so, and with other points in the round, he is now in the lead, just one ahead of Lisa Tarbuck, and then Stephen Fry, and then Clement Freud. Stephen, it's your turn to begin, and we have here a Schadenfreude. Ooh. Can you tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now?
Not the daughter of one of our panellists, but a German word comes from two separate meanings, Schaden meaning shame or disgrace, Freude, joy, as in Schiller's famous ode to that emotion. It really betokens that pleasure we take in other people's misfortunes. For example, I suppose everyone can remember Michael Portillo losing his seat. There was a great surge of national Schadenfreude, whatever our political feelings. Somehow, I think almost every single member of the plebiscitar electorate in some way joined in with great enjoyment for that moment. However, Schadenfreude seems a very Teutonic kind of quality, and it's therefore no accident that there is no English phraseology or nomenclature for it, but we use instead the Tedeschi, as they would say in Italy, the Germanic, if you like, and I personally don't. Schadenfreude, of course, also means something slightly more sinister or unpleasant, which is a genuine delight in real misfortune. That, I think, is unforgivable.
Well, that hasn't happened in just a minute for a long time. Someone started with the subject and went without hesitation, repetition or deviation, was not challenged, and so he finished with it. Well done, Stephen, and your applause warranted your success. And what happens, of course, you want to get a point for speaking when the whistle went, but you get the bonus point for not being interrupted. And Clement, it's your turn to begin. Making jam. Tell us something about making jam in just a minute, starting now.
Making jam to spread on toast and butter is done by reducing fruit and sugar until the mass becomes thick. But Ranjit Singhji, the famous cricketer, had a father who was the jam of Nawanagar. And jam is a title in India, which is like a Maharaja. And people look up to him enormously. I remember that cricketer...
Stephen...
Wasn't he cricketer before?
Had the cricketer before, yes.
Yes, I think so.
And so, Stephen, you've got in with 33 seconds. Making jam, Stephen, starting now.
Well, jam, of course, is what I call this programme, Just a Minute, J-A-M, a useful acronym. And making jam is not that easy. You find yourself tumbling over your words and causing all kinds of repetitions, hesitations and deviations, which is not what you're supposed to do if you wish to earn the points that put you in the lead that you so desperately desire. So making jam may be very easy in front of the mirror at home when you're listening, but by golly, when you're down here with the other panelists who are all so good at the game, it's frightfully difficult, and I wish I were better at it. At the moment, for some reason, I seem to be quite fluent, which is odd, because usually I end up not being. So making jam is not quite as tiresome as it sometimes can be.
Yes, Stephen, you made very good jam then, and you kept going to the whistle when gained that extra point, and you've gone forward in the lead, just ahead of Paul Merton, Lisa Tarbuck, Clement Freud in that order. Lisa, your turn to begin. The subject is tipping. Tell us something about tipping in just a minute, starting now.
Tipping could be seen as a gratuity to serving staff. Possibly the norm would be 10%. Or it could be called fry tipping when you've got a van full of goods and you just put it on a camber and get rid of a couple of old mattresses and a fridge down a railway embankment. You could also say it would be a helpful hint. For instance, my mother's favourite tip to me when I was a teenager was never let a man see you on the toilet, which in actual fact has held me in very good stead for years now. And it leaves me with a certain mystery, I like to think, although I could be wrong. Another way of tipping, you could tip the biscuit, which of course is an out-and-out lie, but they're going to buy that.
Oh, Thomas.
Out and out.
Oh, yes.
Valiant, my lord.
So, Paul, you've got in with repetition on tipping, and 19 seconds left, starting now.
Fly tipping is a waste of time. They have no facility to spend the money, they have very short memories, and they really wouldn't do anything to do with it. Mind you, I think perhaps the fondest way I like to tip is when I get a world-famous London cab driver, someone like Bert Norris, who's known throughout the globe.
Oh, yes, so back to cab drivers. We had cab drivers in a show we did some time ago, I remember. And,
they won't remember.
So, Paul, you were speaking of the whistle. Wayne gained an extra point. You're now one ahead of Stephen Fry in that sequence. And, Stephen, your turn to begin now. My giddy aunt. Tell us something about my giddy aunt in just a minute, starting now.
Oh, yes, well, my mother's sister is more than ordinarily vertiginous. That is why she's known as my giddy aunt. Teeters and skips all over the place. You're never quite sure how she manages to stand up for more than 5 minutes at a time, which very often, of course, she doesn't. It's not that she drinks. I wouldn't say that. She likes a sherry first thing in the morning and then carries on. And no more than 5 bottles a day. Maybe that's the secret to her giddiness.
Paul challenged.
Repetition of five. We had 5 minutes and then 5 bottles.
That's very good. Yes, isn't he on the ball?
Very good.
Isn't
well, listen,
you would never have noticed that, Nicholas, would you? Ordinarily.
What do you mean? It's my job.
Oh, yes, sorry.
We know it's your job, but you would never have noticed.
When have I ever missed one?
Let me take you back.
No, I know. There were five, two fives. 37 seconds, my giddy aunt with you, Paul, starting now.
There are lots of giddy aunts in the works of P.G. Woodhouse, and we have with us in Stephen Fry here a man who I'm very...
Clement Freud challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
We're talking about my giddy aunt, not P.G. Woodhouse.
Ooh.
Well, he wrote a lot about my aunt.
The subject is my giddy aunt, and as you know, Clement, because you have been playing the game for a few years, that you can take the subject on the card or any of the words on the subject and interpret them as you wish. And he talked about giddy aunt, which does appear in P.G. Woodhouse quite consistently, and I don't think he has to make it my giddy aunt.
You're certainly wowing the audience.
Yes.
I'm doing my best and... doing my best and giving you a very good line to come back and get a good laugh.
Well, went a little bit tense there. It was almost as if we'd seen Lisa on the lavatory, wasn't it? It was just a slight sudden moment of, oh, dear.
I think we should get back to just a minute. And my giddy aunt is still with you, Paul. 31 seconds starting now.
Round and round she goes.
Clement, I hate to ask you, but all right, repetition. 30 seconds.
No, I said round and rounds.
No.
I did.
No.
I did, I promise you, I did.
Boo.
Well, it makes no sense.
You know, I've been playing this long enough not to start with round and round. I said,
well, I thought
you were
being very generous to Clement, who's training for once.
Yes, I thought you were like a footballer, you know, who kicks the ball into touch after an injury, you know, in order
well,
to give the other...
Yes, I am. Thought,
yeah.
Clement, my giddy aunt, 30 seconds starting now.
I had a giddy aunt who used to, when I was at school... send me telegrams.
Stephen challenge.
I mean, just for the sake of elegance, it was a shockingly split infinitive. Who used to, when I was at school, send me. You know, this is BBC Radio 4, the guardian of the sacred English tongue.
I know, but when
to
you're...
when I used, you know, I mean...
when you're speaking colloquially, in just a minute,
right.
Under pressure,
yep.
With three bright sparks breathing down your neck...
I did that for the sake of Mr. and Mrs. Mad of Chichester, who were going to write in and complain about it.
I'm not going to allow this bit infinitive. No. Benefit of the doubt to Clement Freud. Right. He keeps the subject. Yeah. 24 seconds. My giddy aunt starting now.
My giddy aunt sent a telegram which said, "Start worrying, letter follows." And it's quite difficult when you have relations of that ilk to be able to leave a set...
Paul challenge.
That was a sort of bit of made-up word.
Yes.
Deviation. Well, deeve. I deeve. Right. Deviation in the English language.
Yeah, or you could have had hesitation.
Oh, I could have had
12
hesitation.
Seconds.
I didn't want to rub it in.
My giddy aunt.
Having kicked the football into the crowd, I've run after it and put it back onto the pitch.
And you've got my giddy aunt again in 12 seconds starting now.
I think it was perhaps Disraeli who, when he was addressing the Houses of Parliament... in 1879, stood in front of those assembled...
Clement challenge.
He only ever addressed the House of Parliament. People don't address
houses
of Parliament.
Don't address the Houses of Parliament.
He was drunk.
That's why we love having you on the show. You've always got a good answer. Right. But it should have been the House of Parliament.
Giddy answer.
Right. So, Clement, 4 seconds, and you should know. My giddy aunt, starting now.
When my giddy aunt addressed the House of Commons... she said, "My lord..."
So, Clement Freud, speaking as a whistleman, gained that extra point, and he's now equal with Lisa Tarbuck in third place, just behind Stephen Fry and Paul Mertens in the lead. And, Paul, it's your turn to begin. Snail's pace, something that never happens in this show. Talk on the subject, if you can, starting now.
A snail's pace is a very slow... Oh, this is too boring, isn't it? A snail's pace is something that's very slow delivery, and...
Clement Freud, challenge.
Repetition.
What?
A snail's pace is a very slow...
Oh, yeah, but I ran it all together as one word the second time.
But he did repeat it, right?
I was going to try and sort of speak that slowly for about a minute. I couldn't be, you know... No. I could feel the sense of life draining from everyone.
50 seconds, I'm with you, Clement, on snail's pace, starting now.
Paul was incredibly accurate in that snail's pace is slow, not speedy. Fast would not be a proper word.
Paul, challenge.
Hesitation.
Hesitation, I agree. Snail's pace is back with you, Paul. 40 seconds, starting now.
Clement is looking at me now in an attempt to put me off, but he...
You challenge, Clement.
Deviation.
Why?
Nothing about snail's pace.
He didn't even get going, and you know we always allow people to get going to establish that they're going to talk about the subject. Right, 37 seconds with you, Paul, on snail's pace, starting now.
It's a very inaccurate form of measurement. You're much better off with metres, yards, feet, inches. A snail's pace is tiny. The poor little creatures barely have any feet at all. And if you were to take that as some kind of measure, you would be wasting...
Stephen, challenge.
Yeah, it's a bit slow on that, but feet twice. Feet was in the list of things being yards and feet, and then they barely have any feet.
Yeah. And you've listened well, and you've got in with 22 seconds on snail's pace, Stephen, starting now.
Paul is quite right. Snails, Helix, the common snail, has no feet whatsoever. It's a gastropod, therefore its stomach, if you like, is its foot. Strange animal, very, very lento, very large. Two berries there, I think.
Three berries.
And
a helix.
And a helix, of course.
Helix.
Idiot.
Yes, the snail's pace. Back with you, Paul. 11 seconds starting now.
If you get a London cab, you'll find that they do not drive at a snail's pace. This is because they're on a certain measure. Their time, equipment, the clock that they have...
So Paul Merton, speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point then, and with others in the round, he's leapt forward. He's in a strong lead ahead of Stephen Fry and Clement Freud and Lisa Tarbuck in third place. And Clement, your turn to begin. The subject, my mistakes. Tell us something about those in just a minute, starting now.
Having led a life which is somewhere between immaculately impeccable and impeccably immaculate, I would find it very difficult to speak for 60 seconds about my mistakes, of which, as far as I can remember, there have been none.
Stephen, challenge.
Charming, but there was one, actually. There was a hesitation in the previous round, for example.
A hesitation in the previous round?
Yeah.
Right, it was.
This is deviation. He was saying he can't speak about his mistakes, of which there have been none. And I would say
there have been mistakes.
For example, in the previous round, he made a mistake.
He did make a mistake,
He has made mistakes.
Very clever.
Very few, I grant you.
So, Stephen, the correct challenge. 43 seconds, my mistakes, starting now.
One of my cardinal errors, one of my supreme blunders, of course, was to...
Paul, challenge.
We had a repetition of one of mine.
Oh, yes.
I do this.
Yes, it's so silly.
I know.
I always repeat myself.
If you're an emphatic person, yes, you will. 39 seconds available. Paul, my mistakes, starting now.
We all make mistakes, and I suppose we hope that the biggest mistakes that we make are the ones...
Stephen, challenge.
Who makes? We all make mistakes. The biggest mistakes we make.
Yes.
Yes.
He's catching, right. 34 seconds back with you, Stephen. My mistakes, starting now.
There was a repetition, for example, when I was speaking earlier. I said the same word twice. You're not supposed to do that in this game. It counts as one of my mistakes, and I'm very ashamed and embarrassed about it. I go all red at the very thought of the thing, I hope.
Paul, challenge.
Deviation, he hasn't gone red.
Yes.
No, you're quite right.
He said he didn't
blush.
Red, he didn't go red.
No, he didn't blush. You're quite right. 23 seconds, Paul, with you, my mistakes, starting now.
When I was at school, one of the subjects I was particularly bad at was mathematics, and no matter how hard the teachers tried to drum the basic code of arithmetic into my head. It refused to stay there. I remember one particular algebraic...
Stephen Challenge.
Both remember and one particular.
That's right. So, Stephen, you're back in again. 7 seconds, my mistake, starting now.
Errata is Latin for mistakes. You often see that as a slip popped into books when there's been some sort of fallacy of the printers.
Clemenfoy Challenge.
Hesitate.
A little hesitation there, yes, yes. you've got in with... 1 second ago, Clement, on My Mistakes, starting now.
In 1984.
So Clement Freud got the point for speakers, the whistle went, and he's still in third place. Stephen Fry's ahead, and out in the lead is Paul Merton. And Lisa Tarbuck, it's your turn to begin. And the subject is queuing. Tell us something about queuing in this game, starting now.
Queuing, it would seem to me, would be a chiefly British occupation. I think it probably came from the Second World War, where there were shortages of everything from transport to food, and therefore to stand in line and wait for something seems that it was the right thing to do.
I think Lisa got excited about the fact that she repeated seems and stopped.
I think I repeated something,
and
actually.
And then something as well.
Yes,
yeah.
And you... sometimes if you keep going...
No, don't be sorry.
No.
Happy.
I'm pleased.
So, Stephen... You've got in first, and it's queuing, and there are 42 seconds available starting now.
Stephen Lees, they say, has the best queuing action in the professional game of snooker at the moment, though for my money, Hendry is very hard to beat. It's all about creating that kind of pendulum with the right arm, if that's...
Have that back with a bit of hesitation, please.
Yes. Trying to get the left arm out and didn't fail. There we are. 33 seconds queuing. Honestly, this audience has got rotten minds, haven't they? Just because he's sitting next to Lisa, you mustn't get into jump to conclusions.
I think
right?
She knows she's safe with me. So, I have to say, if anyone would make me turn, it would be this plumptious young thing, I have to say.
He's so kind.
I think you had to cover that one up.
True,
though.
Yes,
right. So, 33 seconds, Lisa, queuing with you starting now.
It's very disappointing when you come out of Euston and look down to where the taxi rank might be and you see that the queue is, in actual fact, spilling onto the concourse. You imagine that you might be there for a good 50 hour.
An hour.
Hesitation,
yes. Right.
And why does spilling onto the concourse sound so rude? Really, it sounds almost unbroadcastable, doesn't it? I don't know why. It isn't, though. It's as pure as the drip and what you do.
Well, that's what we get the letters about, and, you know, from spilling countries abroad. What does it mean? 20 seconds, Clement. Queuing starting now.
I once worked on a television programme where the floor manager said, "Will you need auto-queuing?" And I said, "Absolutely not, because... it will do me great physical harm." And queuing has been close to my heart ever since because I'm basically masochistic. Queuing for buses, trains...
Clement Freud, speaking as the whistle went, gained an extra point. He's creeping up on Stephen Fry, which is rather sinister, but I mentioned in the game, of course. And Lisa's just behind them, and out in the lead is Paul Merton. And Stephen Fry, your turn to begin. The subject is eating humble pie. Good subject. Speak on it if you can. 60 seconds starting now.
Humbles is a word that used to mean offal and various bits of intestine. Some people think that's where the phrase eating humble pie comes from. I think it's necessary and sufficient unto itself. Its obvious significance, which is that what Americans call eating crow. That's to say, some sort of mortification after you've made a mistake and you wish to apologise and show that it was your fault. Mea culpa, maxima, etc., and so forth. Eating humble pie is not something politicians are known for doing. So often they tend to excuse themselves and hide in a welter of reasons and so forth as to why it is that they shouldn't apologise or excuse themselves for whatever it is they've done. However, eating humble pie is a necessary, I think, human attribute of decency and, if you like, grace. Not a word we hear that often, but one perhaps we should be attended to in these dark times of ours. Eating humble pie is something Uriah Heep did not do, however much he professed to humility. Various other characters in Shakespeare and great literature have eaten humble pie. Perhaps that's the great arc which literature travels. It shows...
Paul Tallant.
I think it was the repetition of great.
Yes, that's right, yeah. What are you groaning for? that's what the game's about. Somebody challenges.
I was ashamed to interrupt the flow, though.
I know.
I was spilling all over the concourse there, wasn't I?
I tell you, actually, Paul, you're not going to be very popular with this audience now because you've got him with 1 second to go. Yes, well, there you are. But it was a repetition. No, no, we've got to be fair. We do play just a minute. That's what we're here for. Have a laugh and a fun and play a game. And so without the rules of the game, there wouldn't be the fun. 1 second, Paul, on eating humble pie starting now.
Eating humble pie.
And as we go into the last round, Lisa's just behind Clement Freud and Clement's just a little bit way behind Stephen Fry. And they're a few points behind our leader, Paul Merton. And, Paul, it's also your turn to begin, and the subject is doodling. Tell us something about doodling in just a minute, starting now.
It's something I've been doing in the last half an hour on this piece of paper in front of me, just doodling away little shapes. I tend to do pyramids and triangles. I don't know why. Other people, they may prefer to do something circular. There's something odd.
Lisa Charles.
Something.
Something, yes. So, Lisa, you've got him with 45 seconds.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Yes, lie back and learn.
45 seconds, doodling, Lisa, starting now.
When I doodle, the shape I prefer is usually a leaf, and it always ends up into a peace lily, which I'm sure an analyst would have the most fantastic time over. Well, I'm assuming that because I'm assuming I'm very interesting, aren't I? So other people like... Paul actually doodles squares or triangles or ziggity-zag things, which I think might indicate some level of mental indigestion.
Clement challenged.
I fear there was an error.
I bow to that.
Yes, right. 17 seconds available. Tell us something about doodling, Clement, starting now.
There's also verbal doodling. You can take nouns and verbs, adjectives, adjuncts, and
adjuncts. Adjectives, possibly adverbs, certainly adjuncts.
I take...
What part of speech?
I take adjuncts. Most evenings.
Junks. Fair enough. Take your adjuncts.
Right. I was told to take adjuncts.
Oh, fair enough.
After me.
You're an adjunctie.
Stephen, 9 seconds. Doodling starting now.
Yes, vulvic, I think, is the word that seems to describe Lisa's doodlings. Mine also follow that shape. I'm merely quoting some of the theories expounded by followers of Clement's grandfather.
So, Stephen Fry once again brought the show to a close as he brought the round to a close. Gained that extra point for doing so. I'll give you the final situation. Lisa Tarbuck, you finished just in fourth place. You were a little way behind Clement Freud, who was in third place. He was only just behind Stephen Fry in second place. But out in the lead, with quite a large number of points, was Paul Merton. So we say, Paul, you are our winner this week. It only remains for me to say thank you for our four intrepid and delightful players of the game, Paul Merton, Stephen Fry, Lisa Tarbuck and Clement Freud. Also to thank Janet Staplehurst for helping me with the score and also blowing the whistle when the 60 seconds was up. We are indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this game, and we're grateful to our producer, Claire Jones, who produces and directs the show, and we're also very grateful to our audience here in the Radio Theatre in London who've cheered us on our way. From our audience, from the panel, and from me, Nicholas Parsons, goodbye until we break the air and play Just a Minute again.
And at the same time next week, Just a Minute will be coming from the Harrogate Theatre in Yorkshire, when Tim Rice, Jenny Eclair, Tony Hawkes and Graham Norton will be battling it out under the watchful eye of Nicholas Parsons.